Thursday, July 7th. Having a conversation concerning today's headlines and real-life challenges. I'm Tom Lamprecht along with Pastor Harry Reeder. Stay with us as we apply a biblical worldview with gospel solutions to put the issues of today in perspective. Harry, this is the time of year when denominations gather for their general assemblies, denominational meetings. As we were preparing for this program, we were talking about one story where the Christian Reformed Church has codified homosexuality as a sin in its declaration of faith. But Harry, I really want to focus on what the Presbyterian Church in America did at their general assembly in Birmingham, Alabama, just a couple of weeks ago. Perhaps the headline story out of this year's General Assembly was commissioners for the Presbyterian Church in America approved a motion to leave the National Association of Evangelicals.
That one is making the news, but actually I don't think it was either the most controversial, nor was it actually the most important. There were, of course, much bigger issues. One of the great marks of the church, of course, is church discipline. It's one thing that a church endorses biblical truth with its confessional standard. The true church also enforces that truth with church discipline. Now, the positive evidence of discipline is discipleship, where we're building truth into the lives of men and women. But the negative side that also has a positive desire, which is to win people when they've gone astray, is that the church courts exist to enforce its standards, not only within the membership, but also upon the leadership. Well, we have had the invasion of progressive Christianity to some degree, which has opened the door for the embrace and the use and the promotion, and even in some cases, celebration of critical theory, critical race theory, critical law theory in the pulpits. These Marxist basis tools are somehow thought to be instruments of grace. Well, I would even challenge their value as common grace. And then perhaps the greatest controversy, Revoice Side B Christianity, which basically says that a homosexual can identify as a homosexual Christian, a gay Christian. In other words, your sin that you repented of can identify you, and that you can still have the desires, and they have not been weakened, but as a Christian, your objective is celibacy. Our objective in terms of biblical sexuality is not celibacy. Our objective is chastity and purity, that sex is within the boundaries of marriage, and that becomes the objective in the life of biblical Christianity. Revoice Side B also says that it's not the desire that's the sin. It's only the practice. Well, of course, the doctrine of concupiscence in the Bible, and Jesus makes clear that the desire is a sin. It's not as heinous because you haven't acted it out, but it is still sinful and makes one morally culpable for the sin that's desired. So how do we protect the standards for ordination, that we cannot have men in the ministry and declare that they are above reproach if they say that in their salvation, their desires for same-sex relationships have not diminished? They identify as same-sex attracted or as homosexual or as gay, but what they say is that they've committed to celibacy. We have now made abundantly clear in this vote with two overtures, actually with three overtures, two that lay out the biblical parameters that not only would remove those who make such claims from the ministry, but another one, anyone identifying as a gay Christian, even though they're committed to celibacy, is not above reproach and cannot be ordained to the gospel ministry. Now, two-thirds of the presbyteries have to approve those three overtures, overtures 29, 31, and 15, for them to become part of the Constitution in the Book of Church Order after they return to the next General Assembly if they achieve that threshold of two-thirds of the presbyteries, and then would be voted upon and added to the Book of Church Order.
Harry, a year ago, weren't there similar overtures that passed at the General Assembly but failed to get the two-thirds?
Honestly, they were not as well worded. These are overtures that now are designed to answer the objections to those who said, well, I believe in that, but I don't like the way they're worded. It's sloppy. It needs theological clarity. And so that's what's happened in this General Assembly. So now we will see who really wants to deal with this issue or not. But the vote was over 90% for Overture 29 and 31 and over 60% in Overture 15. We also passed remedies so that our General Assembly Standing Judicial Commission would be required to take on the substance of cases and not just rule on whether the processes were rightly observed according to our Constitution. And we shored up the means by which, if a presbytery mishandles something, how the appeal could be established and on what basis for the entire General Assembly to assume original jurisdiction. These initiatives are efforts to maintain a church that not only endorses truth but enforces truth with true church discipline designed to restore the offender, affirm the honor of Christ, and address the purity and peace of the church by dealing with sin. And then, Tom, of course, the one that you mentioned is a significant one. The PCA kind of punches outside of its weight class in many ways in God's providence, and it was thought that being a part of the National Association of Evangelicals gave the PCA a voice in the world that would be larger for Christ. Many of our elders and pastors were significant in the organization. It was questioned as to how influential we are from the organization into the church at large in the world, and certainly even how influential we are in the organization as the political and social and moral declarations that have been coming out of the National Association of Evangelicals for the last 15 years, the PCA would not want to be identified with those statements. So while any church can adjoin the National Association of Evangelicals that desire, the denomination has severed its relationship, has saved itself thousands and thousands of dollars that we can put to other matters, and just reminded ourselves, the Lord gives us our influence, and we have a voice. We don't have to pay for a voice, and that voice will be governed by our faithfulness to Christ and our desire to honor Christ.
Harry, you and I have talked often about these issues off mic. I know in some of our discussions, you really weren't sure what direction the PCA was going to go. Would it stay intact? Would there be some sort of a split with either the progressives leaving or the conservative churches leaving? After this last General Assembly, what are your feelings in that regard?
Tom, I have said that I believe that our assembly last year in St. Louis would be definitive, and it was. And I believe the Birmingham Assembly that we hosted here would be determinative, and I believe it was. I believe the trajectory is clear. Now, will we, by God's grace, be able to carry it home? Yes, I do believe so. The votes were extraordinarily wide, 80 and 90% on all of the important issues. The people that were put into permanent committees at the General Assembly level for Mission to the World, Mission to North America, Covenant College, Covenant Seminary, all of those were wonderful nominees and that were elected by wide margins. The population of our committees is definitely being placed in the hands of trustworthy teaching and ruling elders. The messages are clear that we want to be a great commission church with a great commandment culture. Our mission is to make disciples. Our message is the gospel, the whole counsel of God, teaching our people to observe all that He has commanded, and our ministries of worship and evangelism and discipleship and intercessory prayer. All of those things are of significant importance. I believe we are on the verge of a reformed gospel resurgency. Tom, I was a part of one in the late 60s and throughout the 70s. I believe another one is arising. I'm praying now for both the latter and the former reigns of God's kindness, grace, and this resurgency in His church that will impact our nation and then throughout the world.
Just like the liberal Christianity before it, contemporary progressive Christianity is actually anti-Christian, claiming to rescue Christianity from cultural irrelevance while actually undermining and denying biblical truth through cultural accommodation. Harry Reader's 9-part series, Progressive Christianity and Biblical Perspective, will help you understand this dangerous threat to the Christian faith. To order your copy of this series, go to briarwood.org/progressive CD. Well, do stop by again tomorrow, Friday, as we continue our conversation and as we apply a biblical worldview to put the issues of today in perspective.